Public Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, as always, the editor-in-chief of the journal. And today appears to be Multimedia Learning Day because I'm recording a second podcast today on that topic and have the pleasure this afternoon of speaking with Dr. Nabil Issa, who is the director for the surgical sub-internship for fourth-year medical students at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine in Chicago. And he's a surgeon by clinical practice. Welcome, Nabil, to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Kevin. Thank you very much for giving me the chance.
Well, it's a pleasure. You won't have known this, but as I just mentioned, it's become a bit of a multimedia learning day for me today. The paper I discussed this morning with another colleague, Carol Yu from UCLA, was looking across the use of animations in medical education and trying to determine which of Richard Mayer's design principles were actually being put into play in the way that we practice within health professional education settings. Your paper, which I haven't told the readership about yet, is also due to be published in the April 2013 issue of the journal, and it's entitled Teaching for Understanding in Medical Classrooms Using Multimedia Design Principles, and Dr. Mayer was a co-author on this work along with a few others. So I will maybe just introduce your paper very briefly by saying that you've actually gone out and deliberately tried to test the effectiveness of adopting these models in practice and see if it yielded any improvement. Can I maybe just start by asking you on a personal level how you became interested in the topic and what led you down this path?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think it's I hope that it's an exciting story as I view it. As you know, when starting our jobs as attending physicians in an academic medical center, the first thing and the first assignment that happens is you're given an assignment by your senior saying, here, there is a lecture for an undergraduate medical student, a core curriculum thing. Take it off my hand. And this is usually what happens. So it's a given. And I was asked to do it, and I did it. And I thought I was doing a good job, actually, at it, based on the students' assessments of my lecture. Until one day comes in a medical student, looks me in the eye and say, Dr. Issa, your PowerPoint lectures are boring. And at first I was aghast. But then I took a deep breath and started thinking about it. Why did he say that? And I started looking around, and I decided that he actually was right. But it's not only my PowerPoint lectures. It's actually most PowerPoint lectures in most of the professional meetings we go to can be described of what was said at one point, that it is death by PowerPoint.
Right.
We tend to put a lot of our talk on the screen and make the screen as a script for us, lecturer, but not for our learners' understanding. And I struggled with that for a while and started to try to reach a consensus of, okay, how can I make my lectures better? Googled it and didn't find too many things that really attracted my eye. And then I went to our vice chair for surgical education, Dr. Deb DeRosa, and introduced myself to her and said, I have a problem. My students don't like my lectures. They like me. They like me as a lecturer, but they just don't think that I'm doing a good job with my slides. How can you help me? And this is basically when Dr. DeRosa, with a very unique style, said, okay, why don't you Google the word multimedia learning and learn a little bit about it, and then we can meet and talk about things. And this is basically how this whole concept of what multimedia learning is and how it started.
Well, good for you for being so receptive, first of all, to the feedback of the student and not reacting as negatively as I can imagine many of us might.
Well, that's the whole thing. If you keep in mind that you're actually there for them and it's not for me, things become a little bit easier.
Right, right. And so you Googled multimedia learning and that led you directly to Mayer's work?
Exactly. So I started looking into what multimedia is and what multimedia learning is. And after the Google, I went back to PubMed and PsycInfo and started researching that because I wanted to come back again and talk with Dr. DeRosa, and I didn't want to seem ignorant. So I wanted to educate myself to have an educated sort of conversation with her about these concepts. And that's when I came to know about Dr. Mayer. What happened next is Dr. DeRosa said, well, why don't we phone him and tell him this is the problem that we're having and see if he have implemented his research on actual classrooms. And this is when we came about the concept that Dr. Mayer, when he started his research, he actually did it in a very lab-tight sort of environment. He wanted to control for everything to really study the different principles that he was advocating. And as such, his principles were not really implemented in real classrooms where people are coming and going, people are eating, people are asking questions, somebody's bored, somebody's asleep. So does it really have that effect in an actual classroom as it does in the lab? And he was very excited to have such an opportunity to examine his principles in a real classroom, and what started our project.
Well, I think this is opening up any number of lines of conversation, but one of the things that you've just reflected that I think many people don't appreciate is just how open and collegial individuals often are when they're facing similar struggles like this. And the expert, you know, like Dr. Mayer, always seems perhaps intimidating or far off, and many people couldn't imagine ever just picking up the phone or sending an email and trying to connect. But obviously this created an opportunity where you were bringing complementary strengths and skill sets to bear on a particular problem that had value for both of you. So
I would definitely encourage everyone that has a question or reads an article that has some meaning to him or to her is basically shoot an email or pick up the phone and just communicate. I think all of us would love to have that sort of one-on-one interaction that will stimulate our minds into more horizons of the same topics or different topics or some cooperations. I was very happy with the way that Dr. Mayer, being the big figure that he is, was so nice and receptive and actually helped us develop this whole concept of doing this research.
Mm-hmm. And if I may just put in a very brief plug as an aside, this is one of the reasons that we've tried to create the discussion boards at Medical Education. So if listeners go to our website, www.mededuc.com, there's a discuss link there, and you can click that and post some thoughts and get a conversation going with other people who have found interesting points from any of the articles we publish. And I would readily imagine that if you were to post something on this paper we're discussing today, that we'd be able to get Dr. Issa to engage with you in that conversation as well.
I would love that, definitely.
Yeah, so again, sorry about that unsolicited plug. I just couldn't resist the opportunity to remind people that that resource was there. But coming back to your specific paper, you mentioned that you got into this because of a student who found your lectures boring. One of the constant tensions we have is that people either confuse or don't look beyond the fact that interest or the opposite of boredom, whatever we care to call it, doesn't necessarily translate to better learning in any particular way. And you've gone out of your way in this particular study to pin down a few outcome measures that I think offer quite good evidence of whether or not people are actually taking something away from the lecture. Can you tell our listeners about what you decided would be the most important outcomes?
Definitely. So when I started thinking about what my student told me, that it is boring, I started looking into what does he mean by that. I actually had a conversation with him briefly, but then I opened the conversation with the whole class over a couple of other lectures that I did with medical students and with residents, and started telling them, so what is a problem for you attending a lecture? And started hearing about strain, about inability to focus between what the lecturer is saying and what he has written on the slide, this dissociation between the language used to say and vocalize the ideas and the language written to demonstrate it on a slide. And once I looked at that, I said, okay, that means that the outcome of a lecture usually should be that the learner understand the concept and can mature that concept in their minds so that they can use it in their daily life. So that's when I started coming around the concepts of what are the outcomes for learning in general. And part of what I came across was that, well, there are outcomes for learning, and these are usually what we talk about. Either there is no learning, there is something we call a rote learning, and there is something called an actual meaningful learning, and started studying a little bit more on these sort of outcomes. So what we all strive to achieve in our learners is a meaningful learning, a learning that can transcend the lecture time into an actual component of the learner's thinking, where he can apply what I am giving him in his daily life and solving his own problems. Further study, of course, of the topic came across, well, how can we assess that? How can we really say that you did do a lecture that resulted in a meaningful learning for your students? And hence came the retention of learning versus the transfer of learning. And we know that the retention is basically when you can revocalize the main concepts or the main definitions of a topic, while a transfer score is actually when you can show that you understood the concept to actually apply it in a given problem. For example, what is the definition of shock? So it's a definition. Mm-hmm. That means you have to memorize it. That means once you memorize it, you just vocalize that what you have memorized. But actually, the transfer is, if I am faced with a clinical situation, could I recognize that that clinical situation is shock? And can I manage accordingly and solve the problem accordingly? So this is the difference between the retention and transfer. And part of the study came across, okay, how can I define my outcomes? And I said, well, if we want to define our outcomes, we have to actually look at retentions of our lecture and then the transfer of information of our lecture.
Mm-hmm. And not only that, but you looked at multiple points of retention and were able to demonstrate that the intervention you introduced yielded benefit in both of those measures immediately as well as after 1 and 4 week delays, which was quite impressive.
Exactly. So this is how we started our research, and this is where we brought our first article into the journal, was about, do people applying the Mayer's principle achieve better outcomes among their learners if using those by making them understand better? And we proved that in the first paper that we had. But then for this paper, we started looking, okay, is it enough to show improvement in understanding of the concept within an hour time after you do your lecture? Or are we really thinking of long-term understanding of the topic for future life? Which means, did we achieve our goal of making the information we have given our learners, did we allow that information to be part of the cognitive understanding of that learner? And this is hence then we started looking at longer period of outcome, which is the 1 week and then 4 weeks later, which is a full month later. And I'm happy to say that our finding was really somewhat, at least in my mind, a breakthrough, because no one has previously looked at 4 weeks out after applying an educational intervention with a simple venue of changing the multimedia message. And that's what we have achieved with this article.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the difficulties with any sort of educational intervention is the fully comprehensive description of what actually was altered and what was delivered to the students. In this particular case, it seems like you have a great opportunity to lay the two PowerPoints side by side and really make it clear to people what you changed. We won't have time to go into all those details, and you've already mentioned a couple of the principles that you used to try to make those changes, and so I'll refer the listeners to your paper for more of that information. question, but maybe I could finish for now by just asking you, having gone through this exercise and applied the design principles from the cognitive psychology literature to improving your PowerPoints, what would you put forward as the most important recommendation that you would have for other people who are trying to determine how to improve their own practices?
Two things. Number one, never take it lightly when your senior gives you an assignment to do a lecture for an undergrad. Okay, they listen, they hear, and they can critique you. So make sure that you understand what you are up against, okay? And this is number one. Number two is trying to bring the concept of faculty development programs. People who educate others have to go through faculty development programs that should include the most commonly and most widely used method of transferring education, and that is a PowerPoint slide. It's important to make sure that you understand that there is a science behind it, and it's okay to borrow from the cognitive psychology or other sciences to adopt into our own area of expertise. I know that there is a lot of specialization and subspecialization in all aspects of medicine, but I think it's very important to really stop and look around you for other people that have done a lot of work on the concepts that you are trying to do. And I think the PowerPoint slides or multimedia messages are very common to be used and very important to understand that there is science behind it that you need to apply if you want to make it effective.
That's a perfect note to end on. So I will do that by congratulating you on the work. First of all, it's a very strong paper and an impressive test of the way in which theory might be applied in practice. And again, not only congratulations on the work, but on being so receptive and open to this journey in the first place. It's been a delight talking to you.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it, Kevin. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. I'll just, before signing off, remind our listeners that I've been speaking with Dr. Nabil Issa, who's at Northwestern University in Chicago, and we've been discussing a paper that he has coming out in the April 2013 issue of Medical Education entitled Teaching for Understanding in Medical Classrooms Using Multimedia Design Principles. Until next time, I will bid you adieu.